The management profession. Introduction. The property management profession is as varied as the types of available properties in the commercial market. The manager of a residential apartment complex will have a job that is very different from that of the manager of an industrial park or an office building. The growing complexity of properties has dramatically altered the role of the manager. Property management is a challenging niche. Many smaller brokerages do not allow their sponsored agents to perform activities associated with property management because they do not want the liability. Remember, the broker has a responsibility to inform, in writing, exactly what an agent is authorized to do. Agents who are interested in property management need to align themselves with a broker who allows property management in the firm. Brokers should caution their agents that performing any activities associated with property management without a management agreement could present potential risks that the broker's basic E and O policy may not cover. A written property management agreement between the property owner and the brokerage should include the duties and responsibilities of the property manager and the property owner, the management term, when the agreement begins and ends, a detailed description of the property written when the property manager, firm, takes over management duties, policies and procedures for repair of the property. Property managers should take extensive notes on the condition of each property and record any occurrence while the management agreement is in effect. Extensive notes will serve as protection against claims as claims against property managers are on the rise. Types of property managers. Many property owners are investors and may not live in the same city, state, or even the same country in which the property is located. These owners employ a property manager to oversee and maintain their investment and deal with tenants. Not all property managers are created equal, however. Any property management company that engages in leasing activity and solicits prospects by phone may not utilize unlicensed employees to solicit business. Only licensed leasing agents may solicit prospects by phone. There are several types, including individual property manager. Individual property managers are not required to be licensed by the state as long as they manage one or more properties as an employee of the owner. This manager usually works directly for the owner of the property as a salaried employee, for example, an on-site manager of an apartment complex. The on-site manager must have an office located on the property, though he or she is not required to live on the property. In Texas, PMs of townhomes and condominiums must be licensed. Licensed property manager. These are licensed real estate agents who work for a property management firm or for a licensed broker who offers property management services. There is no real estate license requirement in Texas to manage an office building, as long as the PM does not show space or quote rents. Many large national and international commercial real estate firms that offer property management services will require their property managers to be licensed. Property owners and their employees are exempt from licensure and may show space and quote leasing rates. Resident manager. Residential property managers often live on the property that they manage and may be employed by an individual owner or by a property management firm. A residential property manager is a liaison, a buffer between the property owner S and the residents. The PM needs to create and maintain a relationship with the residents. Multifamily and apartment managers call their tenants residents, so they will trust management's decisions and operations. However, the property manager's client is the investor/property owner, and the property manager must make sure that the investor is getting the desired return. Balancing the resident's needs against the investor's desires is a delicate act on the part of the property manager. It is easier to keep your current residents happy than to replace them with new ones. Residential property management. Residential management includes the management of all residential properties ranging from single-family homes to large apartment communities. Possibilities include 1. Single-family homes. The owner/landlord manages most single-family homes used as rentals. However, a growing portfolio of single-family properties scattered over a large area may make professional management desirable. The National Association of Residential Property Managers is an organization of managers of single-family and small multifamily properties. For more information, visit http://www.narpm.org. 2. Vacation rentals. Short-term rentals of homes and condos in resort areas are almost always managed by a vacation rental firm. 3. Manufactured home parks. These parks, formerly known as mobile home parks, generally require full-time professional management. The larger and more luxurious parks offer a wide range of amenities, all of which require oversight. Manufactured home parks are not mobile in nature, as only a small percentage of the homes in a community will ever move a second time. This type of community is a favorite of retirees who appreciate security, management, and low maintenance. 4. Multifamily housing. Larger residential properties may be managed by employees or independent contractors who are on site. These properties will have a manager supervising a support staff of leasing agents and maintenance personnel. The National Apartment Association is the largest organization of its type, supporting the managers of larger properties. For more information, see http://www.naahq.org. In all cases, the property manager must have superior interpersonal skills and have the ability to deal with tenant issues in a firm, professional, and tactful manner. The duties of the property manager depend on the type and size of the property. Residential property managers must have excellent sales skills because they are responsible for promoting and showing the property to potential residents. They will screen residents based on their credit reports and rental histories. They will sign leases that will bind the property owner. The property manager must maintain records about property maintenance and management activities, as well as perform all bookkeeping. The property manager will make comprehensive monthly reports to the owner. Residential property managers, who are licensed sales agents, are fiduciaries of their clients, who are entrusted to look after their best interests. Each property owner has different expectations for their property managers. Some take a more laissez-faire approach, allowing the property manager to deal with the day-to-day minutiae of managing the property, relying on the reports provided by the property manager. Because property managers must maximize income for the owner/investor of the property, they will often try to reduce expenses in order to increase the owner's profit. However, reducing expenses on maintenance can cause property managers to lose tenants. Fair housing regulations apply to everyone in the business of providing housing and housing-related services to consumers. All brokers and their agents must comply with property marketing and advertising rules. Real estate offices and apartment complexes should display the HUD Equal Housing logo and display fair housing posters to inform the public that the broker and agents comply with federal and state fair housing guidelines. Subscribe to the VAMA. VAMA stands for Voluntary Affirmative Marketing Agreement. A VAMA is a contract that is negotiated between HUD and national associations that represent the housing industry. Examples of these would be realtors, home builders, apartment managers, appraisers, and real estate license commissions. VAMAs promote equal housing opportunities for all. By subscribing to the VAMA, these associations promote voluntary compliance with civil rights laws and project a willingness to comply with these laws. Equal housing logo graphics are available for download at https://www.hud.gov/library/bookshelf11/h/UD graphics/FHEO logo. The Fair Housing Act covers the sale and rental of most housing. In some circumstances, the 1968 Act exempts owner-occupied buildings with no more than 4 units, single-family housing sold or rented without the use of a broker, and housing operated by organizations and private clubs that limit occupancy to members. It is illegal for anyone to threaten, coerce, intimidate, or interfere with anyone exercising a fair housing right or assisting others who exercise that right. No one may take any of the following actions based on race, color, national origin, religion, sex, familial status, or handicap in the sale or rental of housing. Refuse to rent or sell housing. Refuse to negotiate for housing. Make housing unavailable. Deny availability of a dwelling. Set different terms, conditions, or privileges for sale or rental of a dwelling. Provide different housing services or facilities. Falsely deny that housing is available for inspection, sale, or rental. For profit, persuade owners to sell or rent. Blockbusting. Deny anyone access to or membership in a facility or service, such as a multiple listing service, related to the sale or rental of housing. Property managers can reject an application for housing based on bad credit / bankruptcy, insufficient income, history of eviction, unfavorable rental history, or bad reviews, dangerous criminal history, making false statements / misrepresentation on the application, smoking, incomplete application, refusal to allow a background check. Landlords and property managers may pull credit reports on applicants, but must comply with the Fair Credit Reporting Act, FCRA. If the information used to make the decision to reject the applicant was based on a consumer report compiled by a credit reporting agency, CRA, like Experian, then the property manager must furnish the applicant with a notice of adverse action. The notice of adverse action may be delivered in either oral, written, or electronic format. Written adverse action notices are preferred and provide proof of FCRA compliance. The property managers should have screening procedures in place that apply to every applicant. If you screen one applicant, you must screen them all. Advertising residential property. Racial and ethnic terms. The use of words describing current or potential residents, the neighbors, or the neighborhood in racial or ethnic terms will create liability under the Act. Examples of violations would include no Irish, white only, nice Hispanic neighborhood, predominantly African American schools, religious preference. Advertisements must not contain any explicit preferences or limitations concerning religion. Prohibited statements include near synagogue, good Christian home, nice Jewish community. When advertising an apartment complex, amenities can be described without explicitly stating a preference. Apartment complex with chapel and kosher meals available would be acceptable. Sex preference. Advertisements must contain no explicit reference for the sex of the renter. Shared living spaces are an exception, and female roommate wanted would be acceptable. Acceptable terminology that describes the premises as opposed to the occupant would include bachelor apartment and mother-in-law suite. Handicapped persons. Advertisements must not discriminate or exclude handicapped persons. Examples of violation would include no wheelchairs, able-bodied only, no handicapped allowed, familial status. Advertisements must not contain limitations on the number or age of children or express a preference for adults, couples, or single persons. Exemptions. Housing intended for persons 62 and older or persons 55 and older. Avoid comments such as adults only, no children, singles only, couples only, perfect for singles. 5-minute case study. This is a multiple choice question. Once you have selected an option, select the submit button below. Agent J is advertising a rental property that he manages for the owner. He drafts his ad and submits it to his broker for review. Beautiful, 2-2 and quiet neighborhood within walking distances of schools, parks, houses of worship, and shopping. Large walk-in closet and master. Non-smoking property, pets allowed on a per-case basis. The compliance specialist at the property management firm sends the ad back to Agent J with a note that the ad violates federal fair housing guidelines on advertising. Protection for those with disabilities. The law considers a person disabled if he or she has a condition that substantially limits one or more major life activities, has a record of such a disability, or is regarded as having such a disability. buyers and renters are considered disabled if they have a physical or mental disability, including hearing, mobility and visual impairments, chronic alcoholism, chronic mental illness, AIDS and AIDS-related complex, mental disability. A landlord may not refuse to allow a tenant to make reasonable modifications to a dwelling or common use areas at the expense of the tenant, if necessary for the disabled person to use the housing. Where reasonable, the landlord may permit changes only if the tenant agrees to restore the property to its original condition upon moving out. Advertising can describe the expected behavior of a tenant. The use of descriptions such as non-smoking and sober do not violate the act. Reasonable accommodation. A landlord must make reasonable accommodations in rules, policies, practices, or services if necessary for the disabled person to use the housing. A building with a no pets policy must allow a visually impaired tenant to keep a guide dog. An apartment complex that offers tenants ample, unassigned parking must honor a request from a mobility impaired tenant for a reserved space near her apartment, if necessary, to assure that she can have access to her apartment. Housing need not be made available to a person who is a direct threat to the health or safety of others, or who currently uses illegal drugs. Property managers and landlords must make reasonable accommodation in rules, policies, practices, or services if necessary for the disabled person to use the housing. Today, more than ever, property managers need to be aware of the different types of support animals they may encounter when reviewing housing applications. There are three recognized types of support animals: service animals, therapy animals, and emotional support animals, ESAs. The ADA covers service animals, and property managers may not refuse housing applicants based on their reliance on a service animal. Service animals receive specialized training to work with a disabled individual who has a right to bring that animal into public establishments. Agents should understand the differences between pets and service animals. Service animals provide a service to their human companions. They are workers, not pets. Though service animals, therapy animals, and ESAs are often canine, the ADA specifically defines service animals as dogs. Other animals can accomplish tasks or provide comfort and companionship for humans. The ADA has recently created separate provisions addressing the use of miniature horses who are trained to perform tasks and provide services for disabled individuals. The ADA offers four assessment factors to assist entities in determining whether they can accommodate miniature horses in their facilities. The assessment factors are 1. Whether the miniature horse is housebroken, 2. Whether the miniature horse is under the owner's control, 3. Whether the facility can accommodate the miniature horse's type, size, and weight, and 4. Whether the miniature horse's presence will not compromise legitimate safety requirements necessary for safe operation of the facility. For more information on service animals, visit the ADA's FAQs about service animals and the ADA website, https://www.ada.gov/regs2010/service_animal_qa.html. In order to eliminate confusion as to what is considered a service animal, create a chart highlighting the similarities and differences between the three types of support animals. For example, service animals are covered by the ADA. Therapy animals and emotional support animals are not. Service animals are dogs that are specially trained to assist an individual. Therapy animals and emotional support animals can be used as part of a medical treatment plan to provide support and companionship for disabled individuals, but they are not considered service animals. Landlords cannot charge higher rents or exorbitant additional monthly fees for service animals. However, they may charge reasonable fees for damages caused by the animal upon the resident's departure if the damage exceeds the security deposit. Pet deposits do not apply because, as already stated, these animals are not pets. Individuals who claim to need an emotional support animal must meet federal requirements for disability and provide documentation from a medical professional that the emotional support animal benefits the disabled individual. The ADA does not consider therapy animals as the same as service animals. Therapy animals provide support to individuals with physical, cognitive, emotional, and/or social issues. Therapy animals do not live with the individual, but rather the individual visits the animal for sessions in a clinical or office setting. Animals must be under the care or supervision of their handlers and must be vaccinated according to state and local statutes. Houses of worship are not required to allow individuals to bring serve, emotional support, or therapy animals inside. Placing the equal housing sign in the office window, signing the Voluntary Affirmative Marketing Agreement, VAMA, having and adhering to standard office procedures for working with customers, and holding regular meetings on fair housing practices are required to demonstrate compliance. Service animals do not have to be professionally trained. The ADA requires only that the animal be trained, not professionally trained. Disabled individuals may train the dog themselves. Do not require documentation from a professional service dog training program. Requirements for new buildings. In buildings that were ready for first occupancy after March 13, 1991, and have an elevator and four or more units, public and common areas must be accessible to persons with disabilities. Doors and hallways must be wide enough for wheelchairs. All units must have an accessible route into and through the unit, accessible light switches, electrical outlets, thermostats, and other environmental controls. Reinforced bathroom walls to allow later installation of grab bars. Kitchens and bathrooms that can be used by people in wheelchairs. If a building with four or more units has no elevator and will be ready for first occupancy after March 13, 1991, these standards apply to ground floor units. These requirements for new buildings do not replace any more stringent standards in state or local law. Housing opportunities for families. Unless a building or community qualifies as housing for older persons, it may not discriminate based on familial status. That is, it may not discriminate against families in which one or more children under 18 live with a parent, a person who has legal custody of the child or children, or the designee of the parent or legal custodian with the parent or custodian's written permission. Familial status protection also applies to pregnant women and anyone securing legal custody of a child under 18. Housing for older persons is exempt from the prohibition against familial status discrimination if HUD has determined that it is specifically designed for and occupied by elderly persons under a federal, state, or local government program, or it is occupied solely by persons who are 62 or older. It houses at least one person who is 55 or older in at least 80% of the occupied units and adheres to a policy that demonstrates an intent to house persons who are 55 or older. Complaints. If an individual feels he or she has been discriminated against, the individual may file a complaint with the Texas Workforce Commission Civil Rights Division, United States Department of Housing and Urban Development, EHUD, the courts, or with the U.S. Attorney General. The complaint must be filed within 2 years of the alleged act. The burden of proof of discrimination lies with the person filing the complaint. Remedies include actual damages and punitive damages. Violation of the law is a civil offense. When a complaint is filed, HUD will notify the alleged violator of the complaint and permit that person to submit an answer. Investigate the complaint and determine whether there is reasonable cause to believe the Fair Housing Act has been violated. Notify the complainant if it cannot complete an investigation within 100 days of receiving the complaint. Conciliation. HUD will try to reach an agreement with the respondent, the person the complaint was filed against. A conciliation agreement must protect both the complainant and the public interest. If an agreement is signed, HUD will take no further action on the complaint. However, if HUD has reasonable cause to believe that a conciliation agreement is breached, HUD will recommend that the Attorney General file suit. Complaint referrals. If HUD has determined that a state or local agency has the same fair housing powers as HUD, HUD will refer the complaint to that agency for investigation. That agency must begin work on a complaint within 30 days, or it may take it back. If a fair housing violation is causing a serious problem, HUD may be able to assist the complainant as soon as a complaint is filed. HUD may authorize the Attorney General to go to court to seek temporary or preliminary relief, pending the outcome of the complaint. If irreparable harm is likely to occur without HUD's intervention. There is substantial evidence that a violation of the Fair Housing Act occurred. For an individual filing a complaint, three possible venues are available. 1. Administrative hearing. If a case goes to an administrative hearing, HUD attorneys will litigate the case, and an administrative law judge, ALJ, will consider the evidence. If the ALJ decides that discrimination occurred, the respondent can be ordered to compensate for actual damages, including humiliation, pain, and suffering. To provide injunctive or other equitable relief, for example, to make the housing available. To pay the federal government a civil penalty to vindicate the public interest. To pay reasonable attorney's fees and costs. If there is non-compliance with the order of an ALJ, HUD may seek temporary relief, enforcement of the order, or a restraining order in a United States Court of Appeals. 2. Federal District Court. If the complainant or the respondent chooses to have the case decided in federal district court, the Attorney General will file a suit and litigate it on behalf of the complainant. Like the ALJ, the district court can order relief and award actual damages, attorney's fees, and costs. In addition, the court can award punitive damages. The Attorney General may file a suit in a federal district court if there is reasonable cause to believe a pattern or practice of housing discrimination is occurring. 3. Private litigation. A complainant may file suit, at the expense of the complainant, in federal district court or state court within 2 years of an alleged violation. If the complainant cannot afford an attorney, the court may appoint one. The complainant may bring suit even after filing a complaint if a conciliation agreement has not been signed and an administrative law judge has not started a hearing. A court may award actual and punitive damages, plus attorney's fees and costs. Americans with Disabilities Act. The Americans with Disabilities Act, ADA, is an expansive law that affects almost all public accommodations, including retail stores, real estate offices, concert venues, government buildings, professional offices, restaurants, bars, and hotels, just to name a few. Both a tenant in a commercial space and the landlord are potentially liable for violations of the ADA. The ADA prohibits discrimination against those with disabilities by denying them the full and equal enjoyment of goods, facilities, accommodations, services, and privileges. When readily achievable, the ADA requires the removal of architectural and communication barriers. Ramp installations, curb cuts in sidewalks, repositioned shelves and telephones, flashing alarm lights, marked elevator control buttons, wider doors, elimination of turnstiles, alternate paths for travel, and levered door handles for easy access are also required. Single-family homes, private clubs, historic buildings, and religious organizations are exempt from the ADA. Penalties. Penalties for violation of the Act are up to $75,000 for the first violation and up to $150,000 for subsequent violations.